This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
they had hoped it would be all wrapped up and an agreement would be reached before the Sunday mini summit, but that has turned out to not be the case, even though there are some 16 countries who will be attending this mini-summit on Sunday. There are some very notable absences from this particular summit.
That's reporter Catherine Field in Paris. Full details on the story coming up.
Also, Nigeria's Ahmed Musa scored twice in the second half of the Super Eagles World Cup match against Iceland, securing a 2-0 victory for the team. And opposition leader Jean-Pierre Bemba expects to return home to the DRC next month after the International Criminal Court in The Hague overturned his conviction.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, United Nations aid agencies are ramping up humanitarian operations in Yemen's port city of Hodeidah as fighting between government and rebel forces for control of the port heats up, putting hundreds of thousands of civilian lives at risk. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Conditions have seriously deteriorated since government forces backed by the Saudi-led coalition began the battle to wrest control of the rebel Houthi-held port of Hodeidah 1 week ago. The United Nations considers Yemen the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. It has been trying to broker a truce between the warring parties with no success. A spokesman for the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, Jens Laerke, says aid agencies are deeply worried about the civilians caught in the middle of this conflict. He notes even before the fighting began, conditions in Hodeidah were some of the worst in the country.
25% of children in Hodeidah are suffering from acute malnutrition. If malnutritional support from humanitarian partners is disrupted, it risks the lives of almost 100,000 children. Hodeidah was also one of the epicenters of last year's cholera outbreak, one of the worst in modern history.
Last year, cholera cases in Yemen topped 1 million in the world's worst outbreak of the disease. A World Health Organization spokesman, Christian Lindemeyer, tells VOA concerns are growing over a possible resurgence of this fatal disease.
Monday, a major water pump was hit, leaving 10,000 households without water supplies and with increased risk to waterborne diseases. So here's a fear that the situation might fuel another wave of cholera.
Lindmeyer says there are plans to vaccinate more than 800,000 people in Hodeidah with oral cholera vaccination. The port of Hodeidah is a vital lifeline for people throughout Yemen. It imports crucial humanitarian relief supplies and is the main entry point for commercial goods, including fuel, food, and medicines. Putting this vital port out of commission would have dire humanitarian consequences. The World Food Program reports so far it has been able to provide food to Yemen on a nonstop basis. This week, it reports it imported enough food for 6 million people for 1 month. WFP spokeswoman Bettina Lucia warns the situation for millions of people would become life-threatening if the port were no longer operational.
We are basically keeping the people of Yemen alive. Without the humanitarians, all of the humanitarian partners, the people of Yemen would die if the humanitarians were not on the ground. So we have been bringing food into Hodeidah, we're channeling it into other areas, and we are always talking with all sides to make sure that humanitarian aid is going in.
Another casualty of the war is the suspension of migrant returns from Yemen. The International Organization for Migration reports it has been forced to postpone its operation to help migrants stranded in Hodeidah return home because of the fighting. Last year, the agency repatriated 2,860 migrants from Yemen, 746 through Hodeida port. The majority were Ethiopian migrants. Others included migrants from Sri Lanka, India, Nigeria, and Pakistan. So far this year, IOM has assisted more than 430 migrant returns. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Sudan's government says that while it would include members of the opposition in the government, it would not allow rebel leader Riek Machar to have a role. Information Minister Michael Makuei said South Sudan's people have had enough of Machar. The comments follow South Sudan President Salva Kiir's meeting with Machar this week in Addis Ababa. The opposition said nothing was agreed on at the meeting, the first time the two leaders have been face-to-face in 2 years. And they said the refusal to include Machar in government could derail the peace process. Kiir accuses Machar, a former vice president, of plotting to overthrow him. The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, pushed for the meeting as part of efforts to create a lasting deal to end 5 years of civil war. Tens of thousands of South Sudanese have died in the fighting and millions displaced. The interim chairman of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance told VOA's John Tanza that they will participate in meetings between the two leaders next week in Khartoum and Nairobi. Gabriel Changsun says IGAD mediators are not listening to proposals from the warring parties on how to end the South Sudan crisis.
The mini-EU summit on the migrant crisis scheduled for this Sunday in Brussels has hit major snags as some members say they will not attend. In addition, Italy says it will not agree to anything unless helping the country cope with the migrants is a top priority. Reporter Catherine Field is following developments. She spoke with me about the latest turn of events and what can be expected from Sunday's summit.
This EU summit really came at the initiative of Germany and France. Both countries are not any of the frontline EU countries which receive the bulk of the migrants who land on European shores. But certainly it came out of a summit meeting between the two leaders this week that they both felt that there needed to be a EU-wide solution or step forward to having some sort of joint action when it came to dealing with the migrant influx. They had hoped it would be all wrapped up and an agreement would be reached before the Sunday mini summit, but that has turned out to not be the case, even though there are some 16 countries who will be attending this mini summit on Sunday. There are some very notable absences from this particular summit.
Who are some of these countries that are saying they're not going to attend?
In particular, it's the so-called Visegrad states, Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, and the Czech Republic. They say they're not going because their bottom line is they reject any suggestion of a mandatory refugee resettlement among EU members. They say that that isn't what they want. They want to see instead tougher external borders to the European Union, so they are staying away.
Italy also is saying that it won't agree to anything unless they get some help.
Indeed, Italy has played very hardball in the lead up to this weekend's summit. They say that unless Italy is at the forefront of the discussions, unless Italy is prioritized in the discussion, they're not going to sign up to anything. And in fact, they've been quite successful in that so far, in that a draft agreement that had been circulated around the capitals has now been taken off the table. The idea is now that this is just going to be a meeting, a sort of a get-to-know-you meeting, a sort of a step ahead of next week's major summit. And so Italy has managed to, if you like, take the initiative on this meeting and say, look, you've got to look at what our country is doing. You've got to look at the pressures that Italy is facing. In particular, Italy is saying, on the one hand, we need help with the migrants who are coming to us, but we also need help from the threat that other EU countries are going to send back migrants from their countries that have first of all landed in Italy and then moved on around Europe. The other problem for this summit this Sunday came from the German government this morning. The German government spokesman said that she thought there might not be a EU-wide agreement. And in fact, Germany is now looking for voluntary bilateral and possibly trilateral agreements to find a way out of this particular, if you like, problem that the EU finds it in now that they do have all these migrants arriving.
In the meantime, Catherine, the plan to set up safe harbors in North Africa has been dealt a blow, with NGOs and some EU officials saying these areas are not safe enough.
This was a plan put forward by the Europeans, a so-called disembarkation scheme. And that would see migrants who were picked up in the Mediterranean taken to sites in North Africa, and in particular Algeria, Egypt, Libya, Tunisia, Niger, and Morocco. Now, there was criticism that these countries were perhaps not even safe for migrants. What the EU has done now is they have come back and they've said that they will go to the United Nations and the International Office for Migration and ask them to help set up these sort of safe places for refugees to stay, and that those genuinely feeling persecuted either through war or civil unrest will be able to have their papers dealt with there and could possibly be given the resources, a plane ticket and the papers to come to Europe and be able to restart their lives here.
That was Catherine Field. She spoke with me from Paris.
Opposition leader Jean-Pierre Bemba expects to return home to the Democratic Republic of Congo next month. Leaders in Bemba's movement for the liberation of Congo told international journalists he would attend the party congress starting July 12th. The International Criminal Court in The Hague earlier this month overturned Bemba's conviction on war crimes charges after he had spent 10 years in prison. Bemba was convicted in relation to atrocities that rebel troops he led committed in Central African Republic. His return to the DRC may shake up the country's presidential election in December. Bemba, a former vice president, remains popular, and some supporters hope he will run in the election. Party officials say it is not clear that he will be a candidate. President Joseph Kabila was supposed to have left office in 2016, but his government has delayed elections repeatedly, saying it needed more time to prepare. His critics, however, say Kabila wants to retain power. Opposition groups have held scores of protests, and some areas have been rocked with violence over the past 2 years.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Huhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. United Nations aid agencies are ramping up humanitarian operations in Yemen's port city of Hodeidah as fighting between government and rebel forces escalate. The EU summit on the migrant crisis scheduled for this Sunday in Brussels has hit major snags, as some 16 members say they will not attend. And opposition leader Jean-Pierre Bemba expects to return home to the DRC next month after the International Criminal Court in The Hague overturned his conviction. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Nigeria's Ahmed Musa scored twice in the second half of the Super Eagles World Cup match against Iceland, securing a 2-0 victory for the team. The win in Russia gives Nigeria a shot at advancing to the round of 16. The Super Eagles lost 2-0 to Croatia in their opening match last week. Before today's match, reporter Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria, spoke with a few Nigerians about their hopes for the team.
The Super Eagles of Nigeria headed into the game in their need of a win to give them any chance of progressing to the round of 16. Back home in Nigeria, ahead of the game, some football fans were optimistic. Nkem Nweze expected nothing short of victory in the match against Iceland.
We've lost our match against Croatia, but then it's gone, it's dusted. It's about us regrouping, trying as much as we can. We need a coach to actually give us the right formation, because I think there's a problem in the formation, and there are some players that you should put on the bench for starters. The likes of Mikel, I really don't think he's really doing what he's supposed to be doing on that field. I really expect that the Super Eagles is going to do Nigeria proud.
Nigeria is at the bottom of Group D after their 2-0 loss to Croatia. Of the five teams from Africa, only one, Senegal, had managed a first-round win. Morocco and Egypt have been eliminated from the tournament. During last Saturday's match against Croatia, Nigeria fans suffered not just a team loss, but also a massive nationwide power outage midway through play. Millions of people crammed into their parlors, bars, and viewing centers to watch the game. Diehard fan Emmanuel Ocharifu says the power outage could not stop him from cheering the Eagles.
The last match between Nigeria and Croatia witnessed a lot of frustration on the part of Nigerians, especially the football fans. It wasn't easy at all when we experienced total darkness. It was total blackout everywhere. But Nigerians, based on the unity the football can bring to our land, they all put extra effort on in their generator.
Nigerian's team has won at least a victory off the field. Its vibrant green uniform has proven among the most popular, and the jerseys sold out the first day they were available for fans. For VOA, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
Unhappy opposition supporters disrupted a meeting the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission held today. They say the commission is treating opposition parties unfairly. From Harare, reporter Kudzai Zanawashi has this.
Members of the 1980 Freedom Movement Friday stormed a meeting the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission held with representatives from various political parties. Francis Dana is the leader of the 1980 Freedom Movement and was one of the members disrupting the gathering.
No, we did have a good chance. You have disqualified that, and the chairperson has told us that we are going to be disqualified. And now you didn't give us a voter's roll for nomination. This meeting is out of order.
In his protest, he said the ZEC staff is incompetent and should be relieved of their duty of overseeing the election.
These people are incompetent, and they should be removed. You should resign on your own before we beat ourselves. The chairperson Chukumba must resign and resign today and now. This meeting should be called off and should be nullified. These people are trying to make us fools.
Dana and other government critics say they fear the July 30th election is being rigged in favor of the ruling ZANU-PF. Efforts to remove him from the meeting were fruitless. Eventually, participants from other parties ended the meeting abruptly, annoyed that they did not get a chance to contribute to the discussion. Friday's protest comes just a day after the main opposition alliance MDC and the Coalition of Democrats said they are not satisfied with the voters' roll the Electoral Commission issued them. Some participants expressed sympathy to Dana's position, but say the collapse of the meeting would damage the electoral process. The ZEC called the meeting to form a liaison committee that will be responsible for resolving any political violence. Zimbabwe is having its first election without Robert Mugabe. The military ousted him last year after he had led the nation for 37 years. Mugabe's former vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, has been serving as president and is the ZANU candidate in the presidential race. The MDC also lost its leader early this year when founder Morgan Tsvangirai died. Since then, MDC factions have rallied around different candidates, and political analysts say that reduces any chance of any opposition politician winning. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Two promising new ways to prevent cholera are on the horizon. One is an entirely new kind of vaccine. The other is as simple as a cup of yogurt. Both may offer fast, cheap protection from outbreaks of a disease that claims tens of thousands of lives each year. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
Cholera can kill within hours. A vaccine is available, but it's not perfect, says Harvard Medical School microbiologist Matthew Waldor.
It's not terrifically effective, maybe 50 to 80% efficacy. Usually it takes a couple of doses.
And it can take up to 2 weeks to start working. So Waldor and colleagues aim to make a better vaccine. They engineered cholera bacteria that are missing the genes that make the microbe toxic. They fed these bacteria to rabbits and then fed them normal, disease-causing cholera just 1 day later. It worked. Most of the rabbits lived. Those that did get sick took longer to do so than rabbits that did not get the modified bacteria. All of those animals died. If it works the same way in people, Waldor says that could help save more people's lives in an outbreak.
They might have more time to get to a healthcare facility. Like, people died in Haiti of cholera because they couldn't get to healthcare, not because there wasn't life-saving therapy.
Waldor's team found the engineered bacteria acted as a probiotic. The good microbes kept the bad microbes from getting a foothold in the animal's guts. And he thinks the modified bacteria will also act like a typical vaccine and trigger the body's immune system. That would provide long-lasting protection from future infections.
This is a new type of therapy. It's both a probiotic and a vaccine. We don't know the right name for it yet.
Speaking of probiotics, another group of scientists was working with bacteria commonly found in fermented dairy products like yogurt and cheese. The microbes are known as Lactococcus lactis, or L. lactis for short. The researchers wanted to genetically engineer L. lactis to fight cholera, but they discovered they didn't need to change a thing about these acid-producing microbes, says Massachusetts Institute of Technology bioengineer Jim Collins.
And cholera dislikes an acidic environment, so we're able to use L-lactis in its natural state.
They found that mice fed regular doses of L-lactis bacteria nearly doubled their survival rate from cholera infection.
It was remarkably surprising and satisfying in that we were really getting frustrated on our inability to effectively engineer L-lactis as this living therapeutic.
The research from both Collins and Waldor is published in the journal Science Translational Medicine. They both say it should be fairly easy and cheap to grow their microbial medicines when an outbreak strikes. But that's still a long way off. These are animal studies. They say it remains to be seen whether either approach works in people. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
OPEC ministers agreed today to increase oil output by 1 million barrels a day. The move comes in response to rising demand and rising prices. The production increase, the first since 2017, is expected to ease fears of a supply crunch and lower world prices. The decision is supported by U.S. President Donald Trump, who tweeted today that he hoped OPEC would increase output substantially. It is not clear if the move will lower prices in the long term. Some say it could offset declining production and exports by Venezuela and Iran. Analysts are also not certain of the effects on oil supply or prices if China imposes tariffs against U.S. oil imports. At least one of OPEC's 14 members, Iran, opposed the output increase, while producers Russia and Saudi Arabia voiced their support. But Iran's oil minister says the ministers finally agreed to a compromise. Six African nations are OPEC members, including Nigeria, Libya, and Angola. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Sporty greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me at 1630 and 1830 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia. Right here on The Voice of America. This is VOA's Sonny Young.